Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
And good morning. This is Jane Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590. We'd love for you to give us a call. Good morning, Jane Marie.
Good morning. Did you fly in on your broom this morning?
No, I didn't. I actually drove.
Okay.
Last night was the witch walk in Ballston Spa. And it's to, I love how they say, it's to raise money for furry critters. So it's to help raise money for basically homeless animals and stuff like that. So apparently there were over 500 people that registered.
And they were all dressed as witches?
And they were all dressed as witches. So
that's a lot of witches.
That's a lot of witches. And there was more than that, too. It was crazy. There were the Ballston Spa was overrun with witches last night. So
that must have been a sight to see.
It was fun. We had a great time. And it's for a great cause. So we did that last night. And then today, after the radio, we're headed up to Glens Falls for the Alzheimer's Walk.
That's right. This is, I think, the last of the series that we've been doing, right?
It is. And Kim and Daphne and Terry, and we're all going to be up there and doing the walk. We've got a table at the walk. If you'd like to join us, we're going to be up there. I think the registration starts at 9. The walk, I think it'll probably start around 11.
I think that's about what they all have been doing. Yeah, they give you time to register. They have music going. They have granola bars and water to get you going in the morning.
Yeah, and it's a great, again, another great thing to raise money for, because we'd really like to end Alzheimer's in our lifetime. Great seminars this week. We had the wills versus trust seminars this week.
Yes, that's a popular one.
It is the ultimate battle, right, between wills.
I always want to do it as a battle, right? Boxing gloves, you know.
That's it. We could have someone with like a will costume and one with a trust costume. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, we do have one more seminar. We have one in November. We have one in November. That's Thursday, November 14th at 2 in the afternoon, and that is the Courtyard by Marriott in Kingston, Frank Sotile Boulevard. We don't have any Albany seminars in November, but we'll have a bunch in December, and they're going to be living, aging in place.
Right.
Aging in place are going to be the December ones. So give us a call, 518-476-5900, 518-476-5900. Dave and I were at a continuing legal education for Thursday and Friday. It was at the Gideon.
Keeping you smart. Right?
Keeping us smart. And one of the presentations, well, there, a lot of them were around the elderly, because that's what we do, estates and trusts. I mean, we do for young people, too. But one of the ladies that presented, she was a DA from New York City, because it's the New York State Bar Association. Right. She was talking about elder abuse.
Oh.
And she actually was kind of funny, because she was saying that her mother actually, you know, died from Alzheimer's. And she said that she has a friend who's a doctor. And so every time she forgets something, she calls her friend and says, oh, my gosh, I have Alzheimer's. And she says, look, if you forget where your keys are, you're just forgetful. If you forget you have a car, then you may have Alzheimer's.
That's good to know. That's a great thing to remember. Because I lose my keys and my glasses and my phone on a regular basis.
That's true. That's true. I do too. It's like you don't lose them. You just misplace them.
I just forgot where I put it down. That's right.
Exactly. So,
but at least I know I have a car.
True.
Although, as we were talking about earlier, I don't necessarily remember the drive-in. But.
Yeah, we were talking about that because Ben was asking her if there was an accident on the road. She's like, yeah, no.
It's kind of like the first time you came here when you just drove right by.
Yes. I did that, I think, twice. Right?
So the paying attention might be a good idea, but, you know, if you just don't, as long as you get here,
I'm really waiting for a self-driving car. And then I can just punch it in and sit back, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm waiting for like the cars, like the Jetsons, the flying cars.
Oh, the fly hair. That would be fun.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. The Jetsons.
Well, in the meantime, I need to like pay more attention when I get here.
That happens. So it's the Saturday before Halloween. So we're supposed to do scary estate planning stories. Do you have any scary estate planning stories or estate administration stories? Something scary?
I don't know. Scary. Scary if you think siblings fighting is scary.
Ugh.
We've had a ton of those lately. They just seem to keep cropping up. Actually, two in the past week where, you know, I always thought when I first started this that people would be fighting over big money. What they actually end up fighting over are stuff in the house.
Oh.
Usually like minor thing. I mean, it's not minor to them. So this estate where they offered the brother the chance to come in and pick stuff. There are five siblings all there picking out stuff, and he didn't come on that day. So then he was upset that he didn't get a chance to pick anything out of the house. And they keep giving him chances to come, and now he's, you know, raising a whole stink over this, saying that they have to stop, they have to account for everything that they took out of the house so he can see if it was something that he wanted.
Yeah, that's not cool.
No, that's not good. And that really holds things up. And then there was the other one where the brother was trying to sell the house before the sister was even appointed as the executor.
Yeah, that never happens.
Right. He needs cash quickly, apparently. Like, no, you got to wait until your sister gets appointed.
And what people don't understand is if we've got co-executors, I have a situation right now where I have co-executors, brother and sister. They're the only children. Mm-hmm. So mom and dad said, you know, what a better way to do it, right? We name them as co-executors. They're going to get everything 50-50. Everything's going to be perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not so much.
No, not usually.
No. So it's one of those things where one of the kids has taken control and tried to do everything where the other child has been like, yeah, no. And then all of a sudden there's no money in the estate to pay the bills because there's several properties. And they're like, well, we need to rent the properties. Well, I don't want you to rent that property. That's the property I want to live in. Well, then move into it.
That's right.
You know, we'll transfer it out of the trust. So it's sad. It really is sad. I mean, if your kids don't get along while you're alive, they're not going to get along after you pass.
And if you appoint them co-executors, they have to agree on everything. So that really is putting them in a tough situation where things could just be held up.
And they think that's great because that way one's not taking advantage of the other, but it ends up being a stalemate instead.
And a lot of time the real estate gets held up that way. Because either you can't sell it because they can't agree, or one sibling wants to buy out the rest and they can't agree on the price.
Right. We had an estate years ago where there were three kids, two brothers and a sister. And I've told this story before and it's like hoping people would listen. Everything was in the trust, the house and everything like that. But the stuff in the house, mom was an artist. And apparently the brothers thought that everything in the house was like so valuable because mom was an artist. And so they made the executor account for everything. And she did. And then she basically kind of divvied everything up between the three of them. They fought. It ended up being appraised for $30,000. Just for the stuff in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I know she spent over $100,000 on attorney fees her brothers.
Mm-hmm.
That's just hers, fighting with them over $30,000 with the stuff in the house.
I know. There's some more issues going on there than just fighting over the stuff in the house. You have to really think about whether it's worth doing that, and some people just don't care about the costs.
Yeah. No, my son already told me he just backed the dumpster up.
He's so sentimental. That's lovely.
He's like, yeah, there's really nothing of yours that I want. I'm just backing the dumpster up to the house and just like dumping everything in the dumpster. So, you know.
How sweet.
Yeah. I'm not worried about that. But
there's no sense in him being dishonest about it. He might as well just say how he feels. Why give you lip service and tell you what you think you might want to hear? You might as well just say, look it, I'm throwing everything out. I could care less.
So
you'd rather know that up front, because then if you have other relatives or something that you could give it away to, then you would do that, you know, and not even worry about it.
It's very true. And so when I just look at my stuff now, I'm like, whatever.
It's going in the dumpster.
Why should I preserve all this stuff? It's just going in the dumpster anyway. And I was in a conversation with clients this week, and I had some pearls on, and she said, who's, you know, are those yours or are they hand-me-downs or whatever? And I had said, well, actually, these are fake, but I do have my grandmother's pearls. Mm-hmm. And because she was saying that she had a bunch of jewelry that she wanted to make sure it went to her kids, and her two daughters were there. And I could tell kind of like by the looks on their face that they may or may not want her stuff. Mm-hmm. And I told her when my grandmother had Alzheimer's. And whenever she went into the nursing home, my mother took my sister and I over to her house and said, you know, we're going to sell all this stuff at a garage sale anyway, you know, take whatever you want. And it was funny to see, to think back about what I took. I took the mixing bowls. Remember the mixing bowls? There was like a yellow one and a red one.
The old
mixing bowls and stuff like that. And we went into my grandma's bedroom and she had a bunch of costume jewelry, but she had this set of pearls. And I said to my mom, can I have those pearls? And she's like, sure. And I said, well, do you want them? To my sister. Not that I would have given them to her. But anyway, I did ask. She's like, no. My mom's like, well, you know, they're not real. Anyway, I'm like, oh, yeah, they are. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I remember when Grandpa gave these pearls to Grandma in a blue velvet box. And I said, and do you know how do you tell if pearls are real or not? You rub them across your teeth. If they're rough, they're real pearls. And if they're smooth, they're not.
Ah.
And my mom's like, well, then they're real. And I'm like, yeah, and they're mine.
So now they probably changed their minds and said,
yeah,
darn, we wanted that.
That's right. But no, I got the pearls.
Well, you got the pearls. You won that one.
I won that one, definitely. And I was even younger then.
That's
the thing. It's different things have different values to people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. I've seen so many. So what we do for our clients is we give them a sample leather to attach to their will.
Right.
And it's a letter where you can list all your personal items and say who gets it. It's not in the will, so it's not legally binding, but people do it 9 times out of 10. Your executor is going to do what you say, right?
Hey, and it's just little stuff.
And I've seen so many interesting things in there, you know. I was doing a will for a client this week, and her family has been here, I think, since the Mayflower.
Mm-hmm.
And they have things that go back. She was... And in her list is like my four great grandmother's rocking chair. So I questioned her. I said, is it four greats? She's like, yep. So they have a few items there from the 1700s.
That's cool.
That was really cool. And she was leaving, I think, some of them to the Historical Society.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that.
Yeah, she wanted it to be preserved.
So Jay Marie and I could talk all morning. Give us a call, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. Kind of going back to the continuing legal education that we had the last couple of days, it was very interesting because they were telling us, they did a scenario about in the elderly, and they said, okay, so you're the attorney and you've referred this accountant to do this person's taxes, and your accountant goes to have them sign the taxes, and they tell you that there's all kinds of unopened mail all over their house, and this and that. And the question is, what do you do?
Interesting.
You know, so it was like, do you go and see your client? What do you do? Do you try to figure out what's happening? And that's usually the first sign whenever they have a lot of unopened mail that's sitting around.
Right.
They don't really know what's going on. And we have Barbara from Schenectady. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about, I have an executrix named in my will. An executor or executrix usually gets paid a fee. Is that correct? Or
yes, it's statutory. Uh-huh.
Right. So... Does it have to be stipulated in the will the amount of money this person will get?
No, you don't have to put a dollar amount because there's a statute under New York laws that say how much an executrix will get. So that's what most people follow.
Is it usually a set rate for just about anybody, or does it differ with the size of the estate?
It's the size of the estate. It's 5% of the first... $100,000. Mm-hmm. It's 4% of the next $200,000. So if you think about it, if you had a $300,000 estate, right, you get $5,000 plus $8,000. So you get about $13,000 for like a $300,000 estate.
Oh.
And then it kind of goes down from there.
just say that one more time.
It's 5% of the first $100,000. Then it's 4% of the next $200,000.
Okay.
But what you have to understand is your will only controls assets that you have individually in your name when you pass away. So if you have like IRAs, 401ks, life insurance, if it has beneficiaries on it, it's not going to be included in your estate. It's not going to go under your will, so they're not going to get commissions on that.
Okay. So, say I have a 403B.
Right.
And I should not have any beneficiaries named for that, so that the executrix will be, that will determine part of her fee.
I wouldn't necessarily do it just so she could get her fee, because it's easier to have the 403B go right to a beneficiary. So there could be other ways you could compensate the executrix if you know, you could give her a specific bequest under your will to kind of make up for the fact that the 403B passes outside of your estate.
Okay.
Or you could make her a beneficiary on the 403B for part of it.
Right.
I don't have, there is really no one to leave. I don't have children or grandchildren. So I'm not thinking in terms of what I'm leaving to who.
Okay.
I'm going to. So I have it named and a beneficiary. Mm-hmm. Actually, in my will, I am leaving things to certain people.
Okay.
And she's one of them. The executrix is one of them. But I just want to make sure she gets her fee. So, as you say, it's based on the amount in the estate.
So you don't have any kids or grandkids?
No.
The question would be, and this is what a lot of people don't think about, if we have to probate your will, meaning we have to go through the court to probate your will, we would have to find your intestate distributees. So what they would look at is they would say, does she have a spouse? No. Does she have children? No. Does she have parents? Assuming your parents are gone. Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes.
Okay, so we would have to give them notice, even if they're not getting anything underneath your will, we would have to give them notice that we're probating your will. They would have to sign basically a waiver, and we'd have to file the waiver along with a family tree and an affidavit and all that stuff with the court in order to probate your will. So what you might want to think about, because you really don't have a nuclear family, you might want to actually look into doing a trust, so that the trust would avoid probate. Do you have a house?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. The house is usually what throws you into probate, because you can't name a beneficiary on a deed. So if you had a trust and you deeded that house to the trust, and then you could also, if you really wanted to, you could have your retirement accounts and life insurance all pour into the trust, and then the trust would distribute all of the assets to whomever you want them to go to.
And then you avoid the probate.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, that's really been very helpful. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.
You too.
Be careful. Be careful flying home on that broom.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
And we have Sharon from Waterville. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. What can we help you with?
I actually just had a question. My father has a savings account, and he put my name on it with him probably about 5 years ago. How would that, I mean, I have a brother that doesn't live around here, but and my father really doesn't speak with him, but to avoid any issues afterwards, how would that work? With my brother, my father is adamant that everything would go to me and I would distribute whatever afterwards. And I totally understand all that, but how would that work legally?
Well, so it really depends on what your father's intent was when he put you on that account with him. So if he put you on the account to say he wanted you to get it, right after he died, that's one thing.
Yes.
But A lot of people put their child on the account so they can pay bills, and that's what we call a convenience account, which means that it was only to pay bills while he was alive, but not after he's gone, and it really is part of the estate. So if it's part of the estate, then it goes back and gets split between you and your brother.
He didn't want it that way. He wanted it that it basically it's going to be left to me.
That's going to be left to you. I mean, he could even add to make it clearer on that name you as a beneficiary on the account. Well, no, it's in joint name. Well,
it's joint.
No.
I think he has already anyways.
Okay. No, it's joint, so it's going to go to you directly. I've seen sometimes people write down that it was their intent that account go to you. I actually had that in a case recently, and that helped see what the intent was when he added you on the account, because it goes to you outside of probate. It's up to your brother to say it needs to come back into the estate because it wasn't meant to go to you.
Yeah, like he doesn't own a house or anything like that. But in addition to that, he did, I know I'm not sure if this is legally binding or not, but he did do like a will that he wrote out and had it notarized.
Well, doing a will on your own, it has to have two witnesses. Right, so having it notarized alone wouldn't really do the job. So if he does want to have a will done, he needs to have it, you know, drawn up by a lawyer, witnessed by two witnesses. If he just had it notarized, it's not going to be accepted as a will.
Okay, if he had it witnessed a couple people at that time, I think he did, but I have to look at it again. Then it would still be standing.
I would have someone look at it while your dad's still alive so you have the chance to correct it if it's wrong. You know, sometimes when people do wills on their own, it does work out, but not always because you may have the wrong form. It may not conform to New York law. So at the very least, I would have a lawyer look at it to see if it would stand up.
And again, if he doesn't have any, you say he didn't have a house. So if he doesn't have any assets that are individually in his name, if he has checking, savings, CDs, whatever, life insurance, retirement, everything has a beneficiary or it's joint, then you won't have to probate the will.
He already put my name down on everything.
So then you may be okay. What I would do, though, is I would just have someone look at the will. I had someone that did, they did the will themselves. The lady was getting ready to pass. They did the will themselves. They actually did it correctly. They had two witnesses, everything was done right, but unfortunately, the way they worded it, the only thing she gave away was her cat. there was a little bit of an issue with the assets. The cat, though, cat was taken care of, but not the rest of the assets. So we do offer free consults. So if you wanted to call the office on Monday and have Stacy put some time on one of our calendars, I mean, you could probably scan and email the will to us, or you could come in to the office and we could look at it for you and make sure that it's okay. The office phone number is 518-465-7581, and Stacy's at extension 126. That was 518-465-7581, and Stacy's at 126, and she could put some time on one of our calendars. Again, maybe you could scan and email the will to us. We could look at it and tell you if it's okay, or maybe set up some time on our calendar for you to come in and meet with us.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that a lot.
No problem. You have a great weekend.
You do the same. Thank you again for answering my questions.
No problem. And if you want to be our next caller before the break, it might be tight. 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590.
Just to follow up on that, sometimes when people do their own will, they don't do the affidavit of attesting witness, which is a document at the end that the witness is signed to say that, you know, they saw the test day, they signed the will, he or she was over 18, of sound mind. And they have to sign an affidavit and have that notarized.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's why when people say their will was notarized, I'm like, well, the will really doesn't have to be notarized, but the attesting witness affidavit does.
Right. And maybe they got that confused, but some people just leave that off entirely. Now, it's not, you know, the end of the world if you don't, but what it means is when you go to probate the will, you have to go find those witnesses and have them sign the affidavit then. And we've had to do that a few times and where the witness has died.
Yeah, I have one right now that both the witnesses are dead. Mm-hmm. And we had to find the secretary that was in the office. It was great because the people actually knew them, mm-hmm. right? And so we had to have the secretary sign an affidavit that says that, yeah, mm-hmm. both of the witnesses are dead. Then we had to send in their death, copies of their death certificates and obits to the surrogate court. And we have Amanda from Waterford. Good morning, Amanda.
Yes, good morning, ladies.
What can we help you with?
Okay, I have a kind of a different-sided question. I have a situation, and my sister said she does not want anything at all. My grandmother passed away intestate, and she didn't make anything up, and we had told her for years to do something, but she just didn't. And so it's kind of a messy situation. She had 5 children, 3 children that predeceased her. Mm. And then the 3 children who predeceased her each have 2 to 3 children. Mm. So my mother's share, it's only myself and my sister. And my sister said she does not want anything at all. And she's been adamant about it. Well, so I wanted to know, I believe that as if she didn't exist then or something, like what happened at that point?
Yeah, what she can do is she can, it's called a disclaimer, disclaim her interest, say that she doesn't want her share. But then it's treated as if she has predeceased. But you have to be careful then, because does your sister have children?
No.
Oh, okay. Because if she had children, it would have gone down to them. All right, so if she doesn't have children, then her share would pass to you as her other sibling. But you have to be a little careful in that situation. But
yeah, her father's still living.
No. Her father. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whose father?
And we have different fathers. My mother had 2 kids by 2 different mm-hmm. men.
Okay, so your sister's father is still living, so he would be the heir if she died.
Okay. Now here's another kink in the storks, and I know this is really interesting now, but basically she's a quadriplegic. Mm-hmm. And she refuses to go out of her way, to go anywhere to sign any papers. Mm-hmm. And the notary in town where she lives in a small town in Ulster County, mm-hmm. said, until you get a valid, updated ID, I won't notarize anything for you, even though she knows her.
Yeah, that's going to be a trick, because anything she signs has to be notarized, mm-hmm. you know, especially for a disclaimer. There's really no other way she can do that.
Is she on disability?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, she gets a lot of benefits.
Is the reason she doesn't want anything because she'd lose her benefits?
I believe that's something she's fearful of.
And unfortunately, and when you disclaim it, it's just like you got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that's not going to work.
Right. Although she could receive the benefits and then turn around and put them in a supplemental needs trust.
First party. Mm-hmm.
So that she wouldn't lose her benefits. So that is an option to her. So maybe if someone talked to her about that, then that may be a way to get around this.
Okay. Yeah, I know there was something at one point she had mentioned possibly giving it between my dad and my kids or something like that. Like, she just doesn't want it because in her mind she thinks it's going to mess her up so bad.
Yeah, no, she can do a supplemental needs trust. So if you want to, give us a call at the office, we can talk to you more about what her options are for supplemental needs trust. But basically, that money is not counted against you and you could still keep your benefits.
All right. I guess it all comes down to how much money it is, too, right?
It does.
I believe, she's allowed to get a couple dollars, like up to $5,000 or something. She can have, or
kind of depends on her benefits. It's either $2,000 if she's on SSI or $15,000 if she's on Medicaid. So, there's a lot of different variables that go into that.
Right.
Yeah, but you have to be careful because, again, her disclaiming it is just like her accepting it and giving it away. So it's still going to affect her benefits. So she's better off taking it and setting up a supplemental needs trust so that she at least has the money and then kind of going from there.
I understand. Okay. I'll explain that to my dad. He's a little bit more, mm-hmm. or my stepdad. He's a little bit more, He raised me anyway, so I always called him Dad.
Right. He's no, really sure. Have him call our office, okay? And we can talk to him, 518-465-7581.
465-7581. I certainly will.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Have a great weekend.
Okay, and we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half. I'm Debbie Verney.
And I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And we have our first caller. We have Sue and Troy. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
What can we help you with?
My question is, I'm one of 15 siblings, and my mom wrote her own will and left only something to 2 out of 15. What rights do we have?
So, if when that will is probated, notice has to go to all of the 15 children.
Uh-huh.
And then you have a chance to contest the will.
Okay.
But remember, there's only certain grounds you can contest the will on. And it's basically, you know, did she have capacity when she signed it? Or another question is, was someone unduly influencing her? So, you know, it all goes back to her state of mind when she signed the will. But if she was competent when she signed the will, and she's, you know, then that will is going to stand, and she could leave the money to whoever she wants to.
So the other 13 are left out.
If your mom had full capacity when she signed that will, yes, she
right,
could.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is mom deceased?
No.
Mm-hmm. So does mom have capacity that she could change the will if she wanted to?
Yes and no. There's sometimes she remembers things, other times she doesn't. Sometimes she doesn't remember what she's eating that day.
Well, I have that problem too, but, yeah.
Well, she's 89.
I have no excuse. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the thing. If mom can change her will, she can change it if she has capacity. If she doesn't, then she can't. And what you need to understand, again, is the will is only going to control assets she has individually in her name. So if there's accounts that have beneficiaries or there's accounts that are joint, that will's not going to control those.
Okay. Well, no, she has no assets. She's like $150,000 in debt at the age of 89. So, no.
Does she have a house?
Yes, with a very large mortgage on it.
Mm. So then it's probably nothing for the 15 people to fight for other than who gets to walk away the fastest.
Okay. I'm not even sure it's a valid will because I believe someone in the family witnessed it. So,
yeah, if you're a beneficiary under the will and you witness the will, your gift is void. It doesn't void the will. It just voids the gift to that person.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Have a great weekend. And we have Mary from Albany. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. Could you talk a little bit about that supplementary needs trust?
Sure. It's called, yeah.
I'm going to hang up so I can listen to you, okay?
Oh, okay. Sure. No problem. So a supplemental needs trust is a trust that allows you to have assets in the trust, and those assets don't disqualify you for benefits. You know, it could be Social Security disability, could be Medicaid, could be SSI, SSD. So whatever benefits you have are not going to be taken away because you have money in that trust. And the money in the trust can be used to spend on you, to pay for things for you, and still lets you keep the benefits. So it's a really good idea if you have a family member with a disability and you want to leave the money, to leave it to them in a supplemental needs trust. Or if in some cases, you know, the person didn't do that and you inherit the money, you know, unexpectedly, You can then take that money yourself and put it into a supplemental needs trust. So that, so there's always options to how to handle that money.
And we always tell people that what they should do, too, is if you have someone that's on disability, say mm-hmm. you have a disabled child, you don't have to disinherit them. You can right. actually set up a trust for them mm-hmm. underneath your will so that they can still take.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Nellie from Albany.
Oh, I have a question. When somebody dies and they have a safe deposit box, in this case it's in joint name with another person, and what happens if they have cash in the safe deposit box?
We don't want to know.
What happens to something like that?
Actually, I had a case recently where this was... a fight, I should say. So when there's cash in a safe deposit box, the question is it part of the estate or does it go to that joint owner? That's the question. And when I looked at the cases, they say if you're a joint owner on the box, you own what's in the box with that person. But a lot of times you're put on the safe deposit box as a signer only to have access to the box, and you don't actually own the contents. So I know the law is kind of like really tricky here. But I guess big picture is, you know, are there other beneficiaries? Would that money be split among them? You know, who should the money go to? Those are the questions. And if there's going to be a fight, then you have to look at that law.
So.
Yeah, I know. In this case, we ultimately had the cash split among all the siblings.
Okay.
Who were all the beneficiaries of the estate?
But would that cause probate? If everything else is passing outside of the will, would that cause probate,
cash in the safe deposit box?
Yes.
It could, if you are able to open it because you're a joint owner, you know, you can go in and take the cash out. If you don't have access to the box and you need court approval to open the box, there's someone from the bank who goes in with you, and they inventory all the contents in the box. So that's where that would come up. So I would... you know, double check with the bank or make sure the paperwork says that you are a joint owner and you have full authority to go in and access the contents of the box.
So they wouldn't block it if something happens to the one person, as long as the other person is alive, because
right.
it's full joint owner.
If you're a full joint owner, right, they shouldn't, right? If it's only if you're just down there that you could sign to get in, then they would block it.
Can you put a third person on a safe deposit box or not really?
Depends on what bank it is. Each bank and savings institution has their own rules. What we always tell people is make sure you're not a deputy, because if you're a deputy and the person passes away, it's just like a power of attorney. It dies when the person mm-hmm. dies. So if you're a deputy on a safe deposit mm-hmm. box and then that person dies, you're not going to have access to the box.
Okay.
So it depends on the bank.
If I have a durable power of attorney for that person, which I'm on joint on the box with, but that wouldn't make me a deputy, right? Because
no, it's a specific thing when you go to the bank that they say, do you want this joined or do you want the person to be a deputy? And a lot of people are like, oh, a deputy sounds like a great idea. They're not really on the box, but they can have access. And then come to find out, whenever the person passes, they have no access. So if you have a power of attorney, again, when a person passes away, the power of attorney ends.
Yeah, I realize that.
You know, so the will would take over at that point. And kind of your answer to the whole thing with the cash in the safety deposit box, it depends.
Right, it depends on how you can get into that box. Or, you know, if it's a joint ownership, then that money passes to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And whatever you do with it afterwards, that's strictly up to you.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to know that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Great questions today. So
really good questions.
And if you want to be our next caller, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll free 1-800-WROW-590. And the office phone number, if you wanted to make an appointment to come in to talk to one of the attorneys, is 518-465-7581. And Stacy's at extension 126. Again, 518-465-7581, extension 126. special needs trusts. But a lot of times we don't really get a chance to talk about those, but more and more people are doing them.
Yes, they are. Wow, we're just busy this morning. So yeah. So, yeah, a lot of people are doing them because in the past, people used to think they had to disinherit that child.
Right.
And they would expect their other children to take care of that child.
And sometimes that works, which, and sometimes it doesn't work. It's like, it's my money, and they don't need it anyway, right?
Right, right. So it's a better way is to put it in trust for that child. Mm-hmm. You can make one of your other children the trustee.
Right.
And they can manage it, but legally it's separate, and it's the disabled person's money.
Right, and then you can still direct it. If you set it up underneath your will, you could say, okay, it goes into a special needs trust for my daughter, and if there's any money left in this trust when my daughter passes away, then it goes mm-hmm. to her siblings, or it goes to her kids or whatever. So the money's still going to stay in the family. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you give money to a disabled person directly under your will, they may lose their benefits.
That's right.
They might have to use that money to pay back the Department of Social Services and then reapply.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of twists and turns that you really got to be prepared for, especially if you have someone that's disabled. And we have Deborah in Albany. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning. Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, fine.
Can you hear us?
Digital advisor.
Oh, now you're breaking up.
All right. Hopefully she'll call back when she's got a better... They're on the road to Manchester, so...
Oh.
Vermont.
Oh, so they could be in a no-cell zone.
A bad area.
Yeah.
Yeah, all I heard
like the whole entire state.
All I heard was financial advisor.
That's all I heard, too. Sorry.
Hopefully she can give us a call back and we'll get her back on the air.
Yeah, Deborah, give us a call back when you get to a point where there's, like, good cell service.
And when you get it, pull over.
That's right.
Well, maybe she's not driving. Maybe
she's not driving. She's actually a passenger.
Oh, there that's good.
So there is at least one guy. Besides myself out there somewhere. So
Ben has pointed out that it's been all female callers this morning.
Yeah, I didn't actually say it like that, but yes.
He said it, yes, differently.
Yeah. But that's right.
Same intent. Same
so what is it, a chick Saturday morning? What's going on here? I said it's a good thing I'm in touch with my feminine side or we'd have a real problem here.
I know.
So but no.
We do have Ben here. If you're a man, don't be afraid to call.
No, don't be afraid.
No,
I'm going to answer
the phone. You know?
Yeah, the phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Or 1-800-WROW-590.
Great questions, though. Yeah. I mean, we've been kind of been all over the map this morning. It's really been good.
That's right. It's been good.
It really has been, and it's great. We love to have callers, and the phones are lighting up again. Here
that's
we go.
That's right. They
I
are.
See the little red flashy button from here. It's exciting.
That's right.
So, it's good that we have so many callers today. And again, after this, for those of you that are up north a little bit, the Alzheimer's Walk is in Glens Falls today. It starts out at SUNY Adirondack. And we have a table up there. We have a bunch of free stuff we're giving away. So if you'd like to come up and visit us at the walk, we're going to be there. And this is the last one, right?
This is the last one, right? We've done. There's been walks in Albany, Catskill, Schenectady. Mm-hmm. All over the capital region.
Oh, it's Frank. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning. I wanted to be the first man to call.
Thank you. That's great.
Thank you, Frank. You broke the chain.
Yes. I just wanted to say good morning. I haven't seen you guys in a long time, and everything is fine. And the supplemental trust is an excellent idea if you have anyone in the family that has any kind of a disability and are getting payments for it, because that worked out well for my nephew.
Yep.
And I'm thinking of trying to get another amendment, but I can't think of anything right now.
Well, you know, Frank, I use you as an example when I do all of my presentations, and I say, my client, Frank, and I'm like, yes, he knows I talk about him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're there. You're the star, Frank. You are the star.
Well, I think the important point that people should remember, as the trust grows older, things change.
Oh, yeah.
Divorces, death, and what you originally intended may not be your intentions recently. So that's about it. And Herzog Law Firm is the best. Trust them.
Thank you, Frank.
And that's about it.
Well, I'm glad you called.
All right, thanks.
Take care, Frank.
This commercial moment from Frank and Colony.
That's right.
And we have Mary and Troy. Good morning, Mary.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. Yeah, I just have a question. Right now, I have family land. My father left it to me and my three brothers. And the way it's set up is that if something happens to one of us, then the other three will still remain the owners. What happens if one of us pass? Do their children and put a lien against the land like they would want their share of their father's property?
So, I'm sorry, I was looking at the flashing red light. Is the property owned by all of you together as joint tenants?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there a right of survivorship in the deed, or is just joint tenants?
Just joint tenants, but the survivorship would be just three brothers and myself. So if something happened to one of us, then the other three would be the survivors.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll say, go ahead. If it's not with survivorship, then your piece, when you pass away, passes down to your heirs. And so kind of the answer to your question is it's very, very difficult when you have multiple owners on property to do anything. So the only way you can force a sale is to do a partition action.
Right.
Could they lien the property? I mean, they're kind of vested in it. But the problem is it's a mess. It's a big, big mess when these things happen. And it happens all the time. I get at least one or two a month where people thought that it was a great idea to leave the camp to the three kids or the house to the three kids, and then one of the kids is predeceased, and then their kids want to get out of it. They don't want to pay the taxes anymore.
And then the other people have to buy that person out, and they may not want to do that or may not have the cash to do that.
Right. That's what I'm, thinking for long term.
And then it's kind of left in limbo for a while if you don't have the money to buy the other people out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like Debbie said, the only way to do that is a partition action, and then you can go to court and force them to try
expensive.
And buy you out.
Right.
Okay. And what happened if one of us had to go into a nursing home? Would the nursing home be able to put a lien against their share of the property?
Yeah, because your share you own individually, so that's an asset. So, yes, they could do that.
Okay. And I had a couple other things. I don't know how much time I have.
Go ahead. We got a couple of flashing lights, but go ahead.
Okay. Yes. I'm in a second marriage, and I own my own house, and I set up this. We set up this house when we were both, we were married together. The house is in my name only, and I'm considering putting my oldest daughter on the deed with me having lifetime interest in my husband. Is that something that is good that would be protected from a nursing home as well?
Well, it would be protected from a nursing home if you transferred it 5 years before you went into a nursing home. The problem that you have with things like that, when you deed it to someone, you're exposing yourself to all the things that could happen in that person's life, right? So is your daughter married?
No marriage, not married, no children.
Okay, so if she passed away... Or you passed away, right? And then it goes to her, or she passed away before you. It's like, where's it going to go? And so if you've got a life estate and she dies, does she have a will?
No.
Okay, so then they're going to look to see if she has a spouse. They're going to look to see if she has children. And if she doesn't have a spouse or children, guess who's going to get it?
Mm-hmm.
You, which kind of defeats the whole purpose.
Gotcha.
So it's really something we try to get people not to do deeds with reserve life estates just because of all the things that can happen. Plus, if she got sued, she owns your property. She files bankruptcy, she owns your property. So it's all kinds of situations that you put yourself in by opening yourself up to things that happen in her life. A trust is a much better way to go so that you can still control the asset.
Okay, so I think I have to come in and talk to you people and try to figure this all out because I am so confused. I've been contemplating with this for like 2 years.
Yeah, you definitely should do something because the 5 years doesn't start to run until you do something.
Okay. All right, well, thank you so much for all your information.
You're welcome.
Great, thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. And if you want to give us a call at the office, we have 518-465-7581. That's 518-465-7581. And we have Deborah, and she has good service now. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Deborah.
Hello. Yes, and I'll make this question quickly. At what point do you know, should you have a probate
or I'm probate, excuse me, a regular will or get a trust? Because my brother, who's a financial advisor, says we have like $500,000 set aside in investments and savings to use in case we need elder care and so forth. But he says that's not enough. You have to have millions of dollars to get that's worth paying the kind of money it costs to get a trust. What do you think on that?
Oh, I mean, no, you don't have to have a lot of money to do a trust. And in fact, with that amount of money, that's something you would want to protect for your beneficiaries. And you could protect that in a trust. The reason for that is if you have to go in a nursing home, it costs about, what, $150,000 a year?
Minimum.
Minimum. So you would go through that money rather quickly. So there's other reasons to do a trust than to manage, you know, large amounts of money. You can use it for smaller amounts of money for other reasons.
And do you have a house?
Yes.
Yeah, so the house is something I'd say probably 80% of the people that do trust, they put their house in it because their house is an easy asset to transfer to the trust, and they want to make sure that it's protected so that if something happens to them, their kids will inherit something, because if you have it in the trust and then you do end up going to a nursing home, the house could be sold, the money would continue in the trust and be protected until you passed away.
So you advise investing, and it is costly to get a trust, is my understanding, right?
It's not really that expensive to get a trust. Mm-hmm. What I would do is, you live in Albany, right?
Oh, Rochester, New York.
Oh, Rochester. Mm-hmm. So I would get a hold of an elder law attorney in Rochester and go in and have a consult and see what it's worth, because unless you have long-term care insurance, do you have long-term care insurance?
No.
No, yes. If you don't have long-term care insurance, you should definitely look into an irrevocable trust, especially if you have $500,000 worth of assets, because especially even if just one of you went into the nursing home, the most you're going to be able to keep is like $150,000, $160,000 and a house and a car. So you're definitely going to have some exposure there.
Okay. Okay, so we'll see about speaking to an elder law attorney.
That's an excellent idea.
Very good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Enjoy the travels. Safe travels. We have another person. We have another male. Joe from Clifton Park. Good morning, Joe.
Yeah, good morning. I would like to know, is there a difference between an irrevocable trust and a Medicaid trust, or are they the same?
Well, generally, all the trusts we do are irrevocable trusts. We just use a shorthand. We call it a Medicaid trust because it protects your assets for Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, that's what we're talking about. And there are irrevocable trusts you could set up for other reasons, for example, holding life insurance. But that's a very specific purpose. I think most of the time, people are talking about Medicaid trusts.
Irrevocable trusts,
right?
Asset protection trusts.
That's right. It has
all kinds of different names.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but they all come under the umbrella of irrevocable trust.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
I like the easy questions, right?
That's right.
And that's the thing. There's revocable trusts and there's irrevocable trusts. And kind of the difference between them is a revocable trust, you could be your own trustee. You can move assets in, you can move assets out. It has your social security number on it. And if you had to go into a nursing home, those assets are available to pay for your care. Because if you can write yourself a check, you can write the nursing home a check.
That's right.
An irrevocable trust, you have someone else as the trustee. So the only way money can come out to pay the nursing home is if you sign off, the trustee signs off, and the beneficiary sign off. So what are the odds everyone's signing off to give money to the nursing home?
Zero.
That's exactly. <right. laughs> So that's kind of the difference between a revocable and irrevocable, and that's why an irrevocable trust protects your assets.
That's right, and that's the bigger distinction. You know, Medicaid trust is just kind of a common name for an irrevocable trust.
Yeah, because ours aren't called Medicaid trusts. Ours are usually the family trust.
That's right. They're not even called irrevocable trust.
No. With an irrevocable trust, again, you're going to have the grantor, the person that's setting up the trust, and then you're going to have the trustees, who could be your kids, could be, as long as they're of age, could be your grandkids, could be whoever you want to.
Your brother, your sister, right, your cousin. We've had all different types.
Sometimes I've had people that actually have banks that because they don't have a direct relative, so they'll have someone in a fiduciary capacity that's a bank or something like that. Those are very rare, but we do have them.
Yeah, Yes, and sometimes that works for you. If you don't have anyone else to do it, you have to pay a fee for that service. But that may be worth it.
Definitely. And we're coming up on the end of our time, too. But
we've had a busy, busy hour.
Definitely busy.
I'm exhausted.
You need a break.
My goodness.
I know.
It's tough answering those phones.
It is.
I watch him. He keeps picking up the phone, writing down the names, dropping the phone on the floor. I think
quietly, though. Quietly.
I can't see him dropping the phone on this side. Yeah.
I need to get him a longer cord.
You
or
think?
Maybe just untangle that one. Right. We know how you have issues with tangly cords.
Yes. Which you untangle every time you're here.
Well, I do for the headphones, yeah. But Jay Marie has phone cord issues, so we don't talk about those, though.
I have an issue. I'd like to see them all neat and straight. I don't know. It's weird.
Good luck with that.
Tangle cords bother me.
So on Monday, if you want a free consult, give us a call. The phone number at the office is 518-465-7581. Stacy's at extension 126. She can put time on her calendars. A lot of times we just do phone calls as opposed to people having to come in. So 518-465-7581 and extension 126. And Stacy can put time on her calendar. She can come in and visit with us. Again, it's a free consult, or sometimes she can put time on her calendar if it's something really simple for a phone call.
Or if you don't want to come in, as we're going into the bad weather now.
Yes.
You may want to just do a phone call. I mean, we're not quite there yet, but we're going to be getting soon into rainy, icy weather.
Shh, we don't talk about that.
Okay, we're not going to talk about that.
We're not talking about bad weather. We're going to talk about beautiful, sunny weather.
Yes, I think it's going to be sunny for your walk today. Right?
I hope so. Yeah, because I've got the Alzheimer's. I got our T-shirt on. I want to be able to, wear it and not have to have bundled coats over it. So.
That's right. Well, the past couple walks, they've all been beautiful. Yeah, everyone's wearing their T-shirts.
Yep. You guys have a great weekend. Happy Halloween.
For listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.